Mad Honey is a new novel and it has immediately landed in my Rios list. That's my read in one sitting list. It's a murder mystery with many twists and turns. It is beautiful, it is soulful, and it has not one but two authors who are going to join us now, Jodie Picot and Jennifer Finney Boylan. Welcome to the programme. Jodie, I'm going to go to you first of all because I think we might be getting Jennifer on the line. You're very, very welcome.
Oh, I think we're still trying to negotiate the second of us.
I think we
can
are.
Can you hear Jenny yet?
Well, Jodie, I can hear you. And as we get Jenny up on the phone, can I just ask you, this book has an amazing backstory to it. Can you tell me how it came about?
Yes. It actually came about through a dream of Jenny's. She had a dream one night that she was co-authoring a book with me, and she woke up and got a cup of coffee, went back into bed, checked the newspaper, and basically got on Twitter and wrote, "I dreamed that I was co-authoring a book with Jodie Picot." And I was on Twitter at the time, and I wrote her back immediately, and I said, "Well, what was it about?" We had never met and did not know each other, although we knew each other's work. And when Jenny told me what she envisioned this book to be about, which was very specific, it dovetailed beautifully with something that I really wanted to write about, which was gender and identity. And we wound up, I basically wrote her back in a DM and said, "Let's do it." And it took us several months to kind of organize our schedules. And then the two of us wound up getting to work right during COVID when it first hit.
And it's like, I mean, Jodie, you have, you know, you're famous, renowned for tackling really sensitive, often controversial subjects. Over 25 novels, you've tackled issues such as abortion, white supremacy, school shootings, the right to die, all of those things. And I'm just wondering, you know, I don't want to give away any spoilers because I've read the book, but you had been thinking for a while about writing a book on trans issues. I think your fans, did they want you to tackle this as a topic, given your record in taking on big themes in your fiction?
Yes. So I had been asked by many fans if I was going to talk about gender and identity, and it was something that I always did want to write about, you know, which in many ways, when I think about Mad Honey, it reminds me of my novel, Small Great Things, which takes a look at racism and white privilege in America. And I wrote that book because there are a lot of people who look like me, who are white, who don't understand that the color of your skin gets you a lot of unearned advantages every day. They don't think about it because, frankly, they don't have to, which is the very definition of white privilege. And by the same token, I'm a cisgender woman. I was born in a female body. I have always questioned that because I don't have to. There are a lot of people like me who are cisgender who are well-meaning and don't really know a lot about what it means to be trans, which of course just means that you go from one to another, you transition from one gender to another. And I wanted to be able to create a book that allowed people to have a discussion, to have empathy, and to have vocabulary in order to speak honestly and openly about this, instead of relying on news reports or conversations about bathrooms and swimmers and things like that, which is what we hear a lot about in the United States. I wanted people to recognize that no human being is an issue, and that when we talk about trans issues, what we're really talking about are human beings. And I think that Jenny is on now.
I think she is. I was just going to say, this is so interesting. How am I going to keep this conversation going? Jennifer, you are very, very welcome. And of course, you have a big, big connection to Ireland. First and foremost, you're a former professor at UCC. I wanted to ask you, this is amazing, this tweet that you sent out. But maybe just to talk to me about your own experience, because you transitioned a long time ago.
Yeah, and it's funny how much things have changed, because when I came out, generally people were very kind and accepting. Everyone from my students to my 85-year-old Republican evangelical Christian mother, who put her arms around me when I came out and simply said, love will prevail. And in my life, love has prevailed mostly. But now when young people come out, instead they're faced with this kind of torrent of media blowback. I think it must be very hard to come out now. There's more visibility now, but with more visibility comes more resistance. What I hope that this book can do is tell a story which will open hearts. There are characters that you're going to fall in love with. There is a trance element. I won't say exactly what it is, but there's a trance element in the story. But by the time you realize that there's a trance element, you've already fallen in love with people who you did not know you were supposed to hate.
And I had to close the book at a certain point and go and put on the kettle. I was like, oh my goodness, that part. But can I just talk to you just about that, your own experience? Because you've said love will prevail. You're married, you had two children with your wife who you spent the first 12 years of your married life as husband and wife, and then the next 22 years as wife and wife. What was the biggest, you know, transition for you when you transitioned? As you say, it's kind of different between 20 years ago and now.
Well, the biggest transition for me was not going from male to female. The biggest transition was going from someone who had a secret to someone who did not have one. And so when you have a secret, it burdens you all the time. It's like carrying a heavy weight. And so now, I mean, you know, most of the time when I wake up in the morning now, I don't really have to think about gender. Mm-hmm. Now I get to live my life like any other middle-aged woman. And I hope that Mad Honey can... found in my own life.
Yeah, thanks. I just lost you just for a second there. Jodie, can I just bring you back in there if I can?
Sure.
Because you know, fiction, the creative arts allows us to give expression to things even if we haven't experienced it directly ourselves. How important was it to have Jennifer on board to write a book with a trans element in it? Because, you know, you've imagined many other scenarios mm-hmm. throughout your entire work of fiction.
Mm-hmm. You know, okay, so there's a lot of discussion these days in the literature world about who has the right to write what story. Mm-hmm. And it is my belief that no one ever tells a writer, you can't write this. But it is also my belief that as a writer, you need to ask yourself, why am I the best person to tell this particular story? And in my case, like you said, I have very often created characters who are not myself. And when that is the case, I go out and I do a ton of research. I will interview many people who have lived that life or experienced things I haven't. I will have them vet the novel before it's published so that I know it is informed and accurate. And yes, I probably could have done that with this novel. To have the opportunity to work with Jenny, however, was an utter joy. Because we have had very different lived experiences as women in America. And ultimately, this is a book about what it means to be a woman. And I knew that teaming up with her, we would create something that had never been done before, which was really enticing to me. And there's also this beauty to knowing that I have a large readership. I have a very large commercial readership who might not go and pick up a book about this stuff if it was advertised as, you know, a book about gender. However, by taking those elements and weaving them into a courtroom drama, a murder mystery, what we are doing is allowing you, as Jenny said, to fall for characters who you literally fall in love with before you understand their circumstances or who they are or how they became who they are. And that is the magic of fiction. You are able to change people's minds very subtly and very gently by weaving them through a story about, you know, quote, fictional people who are, of course, you know, real to all of us who write them. There's that beauty about knowing that a trans writer gets to be at the top of a bestseller list because because of something she's written. That's really
important
to me,
too. And also
because
of the friendship,
you know, it's representation, and it maybe will allow another trans writer like Jenny to say, oh, wow, I can make it in this business.
I know, because it was interesting, because when I first read the book, I just thought, this is a really good murder mystery. It's a brilliant courtroom drama. And then there was this element. Jenny, I want to go to you on this, because, you know, you kind of threw up a tweet and no one knows kind of where life takes you. But how do you actually co-author a book like this? You wrote this during the pandemic, so you couldn't physically be together. Did you just have to take separate chapters each, and how did you negotiate
that? That's exactly right. Jody mostly wrote the character of Olivia, which is the mom. I mostly wrote the character of Lily, who's the girl who has been murdered. And so you get to the end of chapter one, though, and wait, Lily is dead? What happens now? So what happens is that the next time you get to Lily's voice, it's 1 week before the murder, and then the next chapter after that, it's 2 weeks before. So my chapters go backwards in time, Jody's go forwards in time, and it might sound very confusing, but I think by putting our voices together in this way, it does make a real kind of sense. So one thing we had to do, of course, was to have a very clear outline for the book and know exactly what was going to happen and in what order. Once we had that, I wrote mostly the Lily chapters, and Jody wrote the Olivia chapters, and we got to work. We emailed them back and forth to each other during the pandemic, and then we had to edit each other's work so it would all feel like one seamless whole. And so it's really very cool. You go forward in time with this murder mystery and the trial. You go backwards in time to find out more and more about Lily, what makes her tick, and how she has managed to win a sense of joy for herself after a great struggle.
And Jody, look, I mean, you are, I think, a self-confessed something of a control freak. So I'm wondering, you said it, so you said it, so I'm not. You said it, so I'm not saying anything bad about you. But what was that process like for you? Because it got so good. You switched characters rather for one chapter. And I have gone back through that book and I can't for the life of me work out which one. Did you sort of fuse? Did two become one?
I do think that we fuse to the point where when I read the book, sometimes it's very hard to know which turn of phrase I wrote and which turn of phrase Jenny wrote. And that was part of something I really wanted as the resident control freak. I wanted readers to be able to read the book and not have it feel like two fighting voices. I wanted it to feel very seamless. And like Jenny said, I think the manner in which we wrote the book allowed for that. We really got our hands dirty in each other's chapters. And you know, because of that, it feels like a unified voice. I also think that it was because I was a control freak. I was the one who had to house the document on my computer. And Jenny had to send her chapters to me. And I had to be the one to input them. I don't know why. I truly, truly am a control freak.
Because you're a control freak, Jenny.
But it also, you know, someone had to drive the ship, I guess. But it was really cool, because I think having someone like Jenny attached to this project, whose work I've read and loved for years, every time I would get a chapter in from Jenny, my first impulse was, oh man, now I've got to do something just as good. You know, and it, if anything, I think it elevated both of our writing, because we did both value each other as novelists before we came to this project. And I think we only wanted to impress each other the whole way through. And so we really, you know, in a way, when people read this book, they're getting the best of both of us, because we were both really on our games for the entire process.
Jennifer, can I come back to you? Because this is a book, actually, it's about secrets, the secrets that we keep, and it's not just trans. You know, there is a very strong domestic abuse line throughout it as well. But one of the things you talk about is fitting in with societal expectations of going along with the status quo. That so for many trans people, they do something that is called passing. Can you explain that to us?
Well, passing, it's not just trans people. If you were different from everybody else, passing means the degree to which you can fit in, that other people don't know about you based on how you look or sound or act. And it's an issue that makes us think about to what degree we fit in and fit in with what. I can tell you, when I lived in Cork, I remember, and this was over 20 years ago, I remember listening to RTE, and there was one day there was an interview with a transgender woman, and the woman was kind of, she was, it was a sad story. She was made, she was made to seem as if she, there was no one else like her in the world. And I remember thinking at the time when I lived in Cork and I was still in the closet, I remember thinking, boy, this life is just too hard for me to live. Mm-hmm. I will say, to me, it is one of the remarkable and great triumphs of the modern day Ireland that here we are, 20 years later, where I think Ireland is one of the most progressive countries in Europe, one of the most welcoming countries, not just to transgender people, but to everybody who is different, everyone who passes and those of us who don't. And it makes me very proud to be Irish or part Irish. And to
I think you still have a house here in Ballyferriter,
Jennifer. Out on the Dingle Peninsula.
Jodie, can I just bring you in? You know, there is a line in the book, and I'm going around trying not to give everything away, but there's a line where they say, where the person says their surgery was so good, even her doctor wouldn't be able to tell that she was trans. Mm-hmm. It raised a question about when you're in an intimate relationship with somebody and mm-hmm. that person doesn't know you've transitioned, you explore the extent to the onus, to the extent that the transgendered person has to be upfront with people, and when. That was an interesting exploration that you had throughout the book.
Right. You know, what I will say is I'd like to pull back from that a little. And I would like to say this is not something that only trans people have to think about. Ultimately, this whole book is about how we have much more in common than we do not have in common. And everybody has something that they don't want to tell a new partner. Everyone wonders, what is the difference between what is secret and what is private? Mm. So let's take being trans out of the question. Let's say you, like Olivia, have been in an abusive relationship. Do you have to tell a new partner that you were in an abusive relationship? Let's say you had an abortion when you were young. Do you have to tell a new partner that you had an abortion? Mm. At what point does your past get to be just your past and not your present? That is a question that anybody reading this book can answer. And every single person reading it can think of something in their life where they did have to make that decision, or they did have to have that. They question that. Whether or not you are a trans person or a cis person, you have something in your past that maybe you wondered about disclosing to somebody new in your life because you thought it might change how they think of you. And again, that's just another way of pointing out we have far more in common than we have different from each other.
And that is, I suppose, because it is a book about secrets. And at what point do we disclose? At what point do we are we vulnerable enough to disclose our secrets to others? And I suppose, Jodie, as well, that also applies to domestic violence. As I said, it's a strong thread within this. It is something that I think a lot of people reading about how that evolved for that character, people will be able to identify with that. How important was it to bring? Because those are two big themes. That's not just, you know, there are several big themes in this book. It is not all about trans.
Right, it definitely isn't. But I will say that it was really important to me to have Olivia be a victim of domestic violence for many, many reasons. A lot of those reasons circled around the fact that many people who are, I would say, the most virulently oppositional to people who are trans, the ones who don't seem to understand that trans women are women, come from, very sadly, I think, a background where they themselves have been a victim of violence at the hands of someone who is male. And to me, to have someone like Olivia, who has been in that situation, still have the capacity to open her mind and open her heart to somebody who identifies as trans was really important to me. It was a good way to model that behavior. I also think that there's a lot that the two situations have in common. If you are a victim of domestic abuse, you know what it is like to have your body be something that has failed you in some way, or that has made you feel like a victim. I think that people who are born into a body that doesn't fit them, in terms of gender, have had that feeling as well. Again, bringing back that sense that we have more in common than we don't.
And can I just bring Jennifer in there? Because it's interesting, you know, that, you know, there's a whole question about the responsibility of the trans community. Whose job is it to educate others? You know, there's a big theme of compassion that comes up in this. And I think one of the things that you highlight is that the people perhaps who are challenged, they're not necessarily mean-spirited or you know, it's perhaps, do you see this book as a didactic, as a way to maybe breaking down ignorance or encouraging understanding?
I hope it encourages understanding, but it's not didactic. It is a story. And, you know, we're talking about all the issues in the heart of this book, but this is not a book about issues. This is a book about human beings. No human being is an issue. All of us are people who struggle one way or the other to become ourselves. And, you know, maybe transgender people have a unique version of that struggle, but it's really everybody. Is there anyone listening to this who has not had to figure out somehow how to become themselves? Is there anyone who has ever looked in the mirror and seen someone who doesn't quite seem to be themselves? So this is a journey we all go on, and it's we learn about it through story. I think it's a story with a lot of love and humor and kindness in it,
and
but
compassion.
Above all, it's a story that I think will open your heart and keep you turning the page after page after page.
As it did for me. Can I bring you in, Jodie, because it would be remiss of me to mention the title of the book, Mad Honey. it's, you know, this obsession with the bees. The bees feature hugely in it. They seem to live a slightly more harmonious life perhaps sometimes than the humans. But what attracted you to that motif, and how much research did you do in the world of apiaries and bees to weave that motive into the book?
Well, the reason I really wanted to incorporate bees into it is because, you know, everyone who, even people who don't know anything about bees, know that girls run the bee world, that there's a queen bee, and that she is the one who basically controls the hive. I did do a ton of research for this. I did it because during COVID, it was the only time I left my house before I got a vaccine. And I worked with a master beekeeper who had multiple hives out in a field in Vermont. And I used to go out every weekend to tend to the hives with him. And I would say that the coolest fact about bees is that a queen bee, of course, when she's doing her job, is laying eggs. Her only job is to make more bees. And when a queen bee starts getting older or sicker and isn't doing her job, the nurse bees, who are in charge of raising all those larvae, realize they have to take matters into their own hands. And they decide they're going to create a new queen bee. And the way to do that is they pick a larva that is at the edge of the comb, and they feed it something called royal jelly, which has all this protein in it. And it is all they feed this particular larva. If a fertilized egg is fed royal jelly, instead of becoming a female bee, which is what a fertilized egg becomes, it will become not a worker bee or a forager bee. Instead, it will become a queen, and the hope is that she will hatch, kill the old queen, and take over the hive. But what's truly fascinating is that if the nurse bees decide instead to give royal jelly only to an unfertilized egg that becomes a larva, which would naturally become a drone or a male bee, that drone instead turns into a queen bee. So that male bee becomes a queen if you feed it only royal jelly, which is pretty interesting, isn't it?
Which is what happened to me, actually.
And tell me then, where does the mad honey come from?
Mad honey is a real thing. When you go out and you buy like orange blossom honey or wildflower honey, the reason it's called that is because the forager bees that go out to get nectar and pollen are mostly going to orange blossoms or wildflowers, and it gives the honey a certain taste. In a region outside of Nepal where there are mountain laurel and rhododendron, if forager bees go to those particular plants, they create something called mad honey. Mad honey looks just like regular honey. It tastes just like regular honey, but it will make you very, very sick. You will have a fever. You will have convulsions. You'll have vomiting and diarrhea. You'll have heart palpitations. And in some instances, it can kill you. And it was actually used for biological warfare. The ancient Greeks would leave it on the road for approaching soldiers because they knew soldiers were always hungry. And the soldiers would eat this honey, become totally incapacitated, and then the home army would just rout them. And I love the idea that something that tastes sweet could actually kill you.
be so lethal.
And that felt to me like a great metaphor.
And it was.
Love itself.
Indeed. You know, I was going to ask what was the experience like of working together, but as you've now completely fused into one and are answering each other's questions, I'm going to assume that it's worked out quite well for you. And I'd be interested to know who we could tweet next to co-write a book with. But look, we are running out of time. Jodi Picou and Jennifer Finney Boylan, Mad Honey. It's a great read. It's published by Hodder and Stoughton and it's out now. Thank you so much for joining me today, and we'll take a quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.